coming to you loud and clear from our safe and germ-free homes and on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in for Tom Clark. And as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. As usual, Zorba, we have a few special topics to talk about today.
Exactly. Social interactions with teenagers, adolescents, young adults, the importance of that and the problems that are going on, and actually that's been going on because of COVID. What does that mean now and what does that mean in the future? And eating late at night might actually get you to gain more weight. Interesting data that may be useful on your diet plan, because with COVID, I think we've seen an increase in weight because people are sitting at home and eating more food.
And speaking of food, what is our recipe today?
Yeah, we always have to speak of food. Coconut chicken curry with rice. It is a delicious recipe. I think you will love it. I certainly know Tom loves it because Tom loves curry and Tom loves chicken.
He certainly does. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where you can leave a voicemail anytime with your question for Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might just hear yourself on an upcoming show. That's 800-462-7413. I'm also happy to announce that later in the show, we'll hear from Tom Clark in his legendary kitchen for the recipe.
That's right. Legendary. Legendary. That's right. If you want a first-rate kitchen, you just go to Tom. Too bad we don't have it online. He's a very private person, so we can't see his $10 million kitchen.
All right.
We've been. Believe that, I'll tell you other stories, too.
We've been going through your many voicemails that you've left us. And of course, Zorba will be answering your questions throughout the show. So let's get started here. Let's kick it off with a caller from New York City.
Hi. You have a very interesting program, but my question is that I have an upcoming appointment is the New York Dental Clinic, the University, New York University. They did not open yet. They are under different rules. And I have to do a surgery. If I leave it until the vaccine is out, maybe I will have more problem. Are there any extra precautions I can take during the dental surgery? Because my mouth will be open, the surgeon will be over my mouth with a mask, of course. I will ask them to wear a face shield and have all the precautions because I'm over 65. Thank God I'm in good health, but, you know, we have to be very careful. Thank you so much. And keep the very good work. Bye-bye.
Well, such a really, really good question, and so nice to have her compliment us to keep up the good work. It's really what we try to do. So, Carl, have you gone to a dentist lately?
No, and in fact, I had a cleaning scheduled, and then, you know, coronavirus hit, and I canceled it, and I tried to get back in, and then I guess they're booked for 6 months out now or something.
Yeah,
so no, but I have not been to the dentist.
And do you floss?
Yes.
Every day?
You know what? I've been pretty terrible at it in the past, but during this pandemic, I've upped my flossing game. So
I mean, that's it.
You've
got to up your flossing game. Either flossing is important or using a water pick. And I think during this time at home, we have to think about that because it's going to be hard. Think about it. You know, dentists have been closed and yet the needs have been there and they have to, there's only so many people they can actually do it. You can't do a clean versus later. Well, the dentists, basically, in our area, have started to reopen, and they're using CDC precautions. So what does that mean? So for me, because I'm in a dentist that I drive to, it means I'm sitting in the car, and they said, let us know when you're here. They're going to check your temperature, which is what they're going to do when you go in the office anyway. If you have a fever, they will say, we're going to reschedule you. That's number one. If you have a cold, if you feel like that, you feel like you have anything that may be COVID-related, even though we know a lot of people have COVID, have no symptoms, if you have symptoms, they won't do it. They will be wearing masks, and they will be doing their best following those guidelines. You'll wear a mask, but when they actually work on your mouth, even though they're wearing a mask, you're not wearing a mask, right? Can't look in the mouth with a mask.
It makes it hard.
So I think what you have to do is then look at the benefit versus the risk. So in New York City, what you want to do is they're not going to open up until basically they've reached a stage that the governor says is okay to open up. So number one, you've got that behind you, right? That's when they're going to decide to open up. And then I wouldn't be first in line. I would say, okay, I'm going to have my surgery, but I would do it a month after they opened up. And the reason is the first day, the first week they open up, they're going to be getting things in order, but it's just like an opening of a restaurant, an opening of a theater, an opening of something else. They may not have everything up to date, easy to do, everything in place. A month later, they're going to be good. The first week, they might be good. They might not be good. So as soon as they open up, I would schedule it for a month later. And once again, New York, as you said, it's basically a university-run dental clinic. They're going to do their best. Is there a risk? You know, there's a risk for everything in life. But when it comes to my teeth, I think it's something that I'd be willing to take a risk for. And frankly, I got to tell you something. I have a dental cleaning. It's actually scheduled. My dentist got it in because there was somebody who canceled. And I'm going to go as soon as that appointment opens up.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. You can leave a question for the good doc. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's keep the calls coming. Here's a Wisconsin listener who has a question about how to approach an important upcoming family event.
We are planning a family reunion. One person was exposed to the COVID-19 virus and was tested. And tested negative. We wonder if he should be tested again before he's considered safe to be around. Thank you.
You hit it exactly. First of all, if he was with somebody with COVID, it's 14 days, regardless of the test. There are false positives and false negatives. So false positives say, hey, you have it when you don't. And a false negative, more important in this case, says you don't have it when you actually do. So number one, yeah, he got tested and was negative. Well, he might still be positive because the next day it takes a few days before the test may show it and may show it because there are a whole bunch of tests out there. And the FDA in this emergency situation has said, well, show us whether or not the test works. But the testing of the FDA has not been too rigorous. And that's because it's an emergency situation. Let's trot all these tests and let's see which one is the best. And frankly, I don't know which one is the best. It's what I call the wild west of testing. So if he has been exposed and you're going to have an event within 14 days, he should not come to the event, period. That's it. That's the long and the short answer. You don't want to infect somebody else. It is unfortunate, and that's the way I certainly would do it.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime to leave a message with a question for Zorba to answer. And we'll get back to your calls in just a bit here. But first, Zorba, let's get into our first topic today. We're starting to study the impacts that social distancing is having on our kids.
Right. This is a summary article of The Lancet, and it looks at social interactions. And it really looks at social interactions in adolescents, teens. But the study of studies was really looking at it up to the age of 24. So you remember your college friends, don't you, Carl?
It's very hazy, but yes, I do.
Well, that was part of the memory of your college friends, yeah. Or the hazy college friends. But you make good, fast friends often, you know, when you're a teenager, when you're older, and here, sure. You know, in your early 20s, you have good, fast friends. And among other things, I think it has a lot to do with what I call the DOS system, which is dopamine, oxytocin, and serotonin. And these three brain hormones are hyperactive in the development of the brain during the teen years and the young adult years. And so you get these squirts of these hormones, and they make memories in your brain, and you make fast friends. And from an evolutionary point of view, from a tribal point of view, before we go into this, which I think is important, remember, back in the day, we're talking about 200-300 years ago, you died at the age of 29 or 39. And making these tribal friends, making these close friends is really important from an evolutionary point of view. But anyway, getting back to what's going on, you know, you saw your friends, you were with them, you dated people. I can remember when I was first in college, I thought if I dated somebody for 6 weeks, that was a long time.
Yeah.
It was like,
sure.
It was like
it was a good run.
It was a good run. It was 6 weeks. And I think 6 weeks is like nothing. But social distancing, what happens? And it has a lot to do with peer acceptance, peer influence. And there's a lot of animal research that shows that when you have social deprivation, you have big problems. There's monkey research, of course, famous monkey research out of the University of Wisconsin years ago by Harry Harlow that showed that social distancing for little children, for instance, when they grow up is awful. The kids that are not touched, that are basically in orphanages, grew up and became completely different people than children who were touched. We now know that importance is associated also with teens. But, and this is the big but, even though teenagers and young adults are not seeing each other, teenagers and young adults are great at what? Computers.
Sure.
iPhones, keeping in touch. And they're doing that, among other things, not just because they grasp the technology, but also because they want to get together with one another. I mean, how often do you FaceTime your friends, Carl?
Not often enough, actually.
That's right. How often do you think a 16-year-old teenager FaceTimes their friends?
Many, many times a day, I'm sure.
All the time. Yeah. Call you, head over to FaceTime. Head over there. I'm going to text you like this. I'm going to do something with Snapchat. Look at this wonderful picture. It's back and forth. It's using all those issues of social media to keep up because, you know, you have this hypersensitivity. And the fear is that this hypersensitivity over this time is going to produce different teens that may have problems. But social media during COVID, I think, is going to make a big difference. And that was sort of the bottom line with these researchers, is that teenagers have embraced social media much more than any other group that we know of. And that's because the need for social interaction is so important. And it's important for their interaction as they become adults. Because as adults, we have to learn to be team players, right? You know, I mean, you know, Mick Jagger said it, you can't always get what you want. I won't even try. Can you sing that?
Let's see.
Come on. I mean, come on. You're a guitar player.
I don't have my guitar here.
You know, no.
Do you have your kazoo here?
My kazoo. I wish I had my kazoo. You know something, but that's so iconic that if you try to sing it, you would sound like you were in a bar as a karaoke person trying to sing. You can't always get what you want, but if you try hard enough, you can get what you need. And that really is what teenagers are doing. So keep it up with Zoom, keep it up with House Party, keep it up with social interaction, because it's important for teens, but it's a lot of teenagers do not listen to the show. It's important for us adults too.
800-462-7413 is the number to call, where you can leave a voicemail with your question for Zorba. And let's get back to your calls. Let's hear now from a caller in the lovely little town of Viroqua, Wisconsin.
I was wondering if anyone has a research study of the Amish population or of the way that exercise relates to diet in terms of how much meat you eat or a vegetarian lifestyle or dairy. I feel like there's a balance between exercise and diet in that way. Thanks.
Well, we certainly know that exercise and diet plays a role, but it kind of plays a different role than people think. They go, well, you know, I ate that cheeseburger and fries, my Big Mac, and then I hit the treadmill to burn it off, you know, because we think of exercise as burning it off. That's what you don't you think of that, Carl? You got to burn off those calories?
Absolutely.
But it turns out you don't burn off the calories. You attenuate the appetite.
Oh, really?
So the data right. Oh, really? That's exactly. The data shows people who exercise don't tend to eat as much. Now, you might think they don't tend to eat as much because they don't eat when they're exercising, but it just seems to be they don't eat as much. Now, it's a chicken and egg thing. Do exercises just not eat as much? But more and more data seems to show that's it. Because you have a Big Mac fries, well, Big Mac, half an hour in the treadmill, full steam. Fries, another half an hour in the treadmill, full steam, and forget about the Coke. So it's an hour to an hour and a half of exercise for Big Mac fries to Coke. Now, her question is, what about vegetarians and diet? That is the other issue. We know that plant-based protein, that a more vegetarian diet, not necessarily a vegan diet, because a vegetarian diet includes animal products of milk and eggs, but we know that plant-based food seems to be healthier. We also know the first thing people want in societies when they get money is they want animal products. First thing that comes off the deck. You look at indigenous people in very poor areas such as Malawi and Africa and in Haiti. The first thing they do when they have extra money is they buy animal-based products, milk, eggs, meat. Why is that? I don't know. It seems to be hardwired or softwired into our evolutionary past. We know that animal-based proteins, especially when you heat them up and burn them, are absorbed into the body and are more likely to produce protein in our body. On the other hand, we're in a society now where we have a surfeit of animal-based protein. So a more vegetarian diet, and I don't know if the Amish are more vegetarian, but they definitely are different with their animals, their lifestyle. I really don't. I know a little bit about the Amish, but I am by no means an expert. But if you grow your own food and you eat more plant-based food, you might have a better diet. You might not be overweight because you're involved with the food. So let me ask you something. Carl, how old are your kids?
They are 2 and 5.
2 and 5. So with the 5-year-old, forget the 2-year-old. I don't mean forget the 2-year-old. But I mean,
it's impossible to forget the 2-year-old these days.
Yeah, forget the 2-year-old. So do you ever cook with the 5-year-old, like when you're making dinner or making cookies or anything else?
He loves cooking. Yeah, he loves it. Cooking. He likes to get in there.
Now, whenever he gets in there and cooks, does he always eat what he makes? Doesn't he always do it because he's had a hand in it?
I've noticed he's more apt to eat it, yes, for sure, if he has a hand in making it.
That's the key. So if you want to lose weight and you want to have a more vegetarian diet, then you get yourself a good cookbook on a vegetarian diet and you start making the food yourself. You don't buy it. When you're involved in the process of cooking, it's hardwired. You are more likely to eat it. And you may make it and you don't like the taste of it. You'll make it differently again. So the Amish are very hands-on. They do not go to the local grocery store and buy the stuff that's pre-made, right? They don't do that. They don't go to the local grocery store. They make their own food. And that's a big issue. They grow their own food, they make their own food, and growing their food means they're going to eat more vegetarian food. And that's where the Amish really shine.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. And before we take a break, Zorba, we always appreciate our listeners posting on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. And that's also the best place to find the latest from Zorba surrounding the coronavirus pandemic.
I do. I update it all the time.
All the time. Many times a week.
All the time.
So now let's turn to our segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Okay, Zorba, we had a funny thing happen recently on the Facebook page. And as I mentioned, you know, several times a week you're posting new research or updated information about the coronavirus. And we always get tons of great comments from our listeners. It's a lot of discussion going on there. It's a great place for that. However, last week we had a commenter share a story about running into you at your local grocery store. And well, Zorba, I'm just going to let you tell the story.
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. I was I was discovered. So here it is. I'm in my car. And I'm thinking I want some Juicy Fruit gum. Now, my mom loved Juicy Fruit gum. She chewed it all the time. And periodically, I just get this desire to get some Juicy Fruit. When I get it, I can think of my mom. I can hear my mom. I can smell my mom. I mean, because it's juicier. It just brings up great memories. So I get out of my car, walk into Walgreens, and I think, oh, God, I should put on a mask. Oh, you know, I'm just going to get some Juicy Fruit gum. And I go in. It's my local Walgreens. What was I thinking? Instead of going back to the car, I was lazy. I was in my lazy spot. Instead of going back to the car, all of a sudden I didn't go back to the car and I went in and got some Juicy Fruit gum. Well, lo and behold, I'm in my local Walgreens and I'm known around Madison anyway. Somebody said, "You're a hypocrite" on the Facebook page. "You're not doing what you said." And I thought, well, hypocrite's kind of a strong word. It means I don't do this all the time. But I realized I had made a mistake. I was lazy. That was not the right thing to do. When I got halfway to Walgreens, I should have turned around, gone back, get the mask. I mean, how much time did it take? Like 10 seconds, 20 seconds, sure. 30 seconds. It doesn't take much time at all. But I was in my lazy mood. And so I decided I would talk about that. It's a mea culpa. You know, it's my Hail Mary, you know, Hail Mary full of grace. Not even Catholic, but I can say the prayer. You know, I shouldn't have done this. But I realized, and I did answer it on Facebook, and I'm answering it now. Because, you know, when you get somebody who says you've done something wrong, it's really manna from heaven. It's really something you can think about on how you can improve yourself. And they were 100% correct. And so that has changed things. So the other day I'm going and I want to get a New York Times. I had to go to like 2 or 3 places. I got out of my car, took 2 steps into our local, you know, convenience mart called Quick Trip. I don't have my mask. I turned around and got my mask out of the glove compartment before I went into Quick Trip.
It worked. The commenter got you.
100%. The commenter put the key in my mind. I can't go into Quick Trip if I'm going to tell people to wear masks because it protects them and it protects me. We're all going to wear masks. I'm going to do it.
Thanks a lot for all the Facebook comments. And if you have a question or comment to add to the show, or if you just like to play paparazzi and bust Zorba for something, don't forget you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
I think I just heard a dog in the background. Is that your dog?
Obviously, and obviously, I'm not at the station.
All right, so send us an email anytime at
zorba@wpr.org.
We have many more calls to come, of course. We'll hear from Tom Clark during our special recipe segment. And Tom will also be quacking up with Dr. Zorba as well. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen here, filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. You can leave a message, and hopefully we'll get to that, and Zorba might answer your question on an upcoming show. Now, we know that you don't just listen to this show to get Zorba's healthy living advice. You also come here for Chef Tom's culinary expertise and refined palate. So, let's head over to Tom Clark's kitchen, where Zorba and Tom are busy cooking up some coconut chicken curry with rice.
It's recipe time, Zorba. What's our recipe?
It's a recipe that you are guaranteed to like, Tom. Do you like chicken?
Sure.
There was not much of a sure. There was sort of a possible sure.
Chicken, yay!
Do you ever eat rice?
Oh, sure.
How about curry?
Curry is good.
Curry is good. Good. See, so good. It's coconut chicken curry with rice.
Right.
So it's a tasty recipe. You know, if you go to an Indian restaurant or other Asian restaurants, you'll often get a coconut chicken curry. It's got chicken in it. Coconut has a really full flavor. It's something that I happen to love. I love this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Where did Carl go, by the way?
Carl, he went to Africa. He decided that he would take off this week, and despite COVID or anything else, and just said, off to Africa. I think there was a movie or something. Wasn't that a movie, Off to Africa or something like that?
So let's do the recipe. Maybe he'll come back.
Okay. Start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
1/2 cup of white onion finely diced.
1/2 cup white onion finely diced.
1 medium bell pepper chopped.
Medium red bell pepper chopped.
1 pound of boneless, skinless chicken breast diced into 1-inch pieces.
Pound boneless, skinless chicken breast diced into 1-inch pieces.
That's right. 4 cloves of garlic diced.
4 cloves of garlic diced.
Another tablespoonful of olive oil you're going to use. 2 teaspoons of curry powder.
That's 2 teaspoons curry powder.
1 teaspoon of coriander.
Little tea coriander.
A cup of long grain white rice, obviously uncooked.
Cup of long grain white rice.
1 cup of chicken broth.
Cup chicken broth.
1 large can of coconut milk.
Large can coconut milk.
You're going to use 1 teaspoon of salt.
Little tea salt.
1 teaspoon of minced ginger.
Little tea minced ginger.
And make sure it's fresh ginger. You cannot use ginger out of a bottle for this. It's got to be ginger, fresh ginger.
Okay.
Although I take my ginger root and I put it in the freezer and then I take it out. And what I do is I put it on a grater and grate it. So it actually is really good. It keeps it nice and fresh. And 2 tablespoonfuls of chopped basil leaves.
2 big tea chopped basil leaves.
Okay, so let's make it. So
yes.
In a large skillet, heat the oil over medium-high heat. Add the onion and peppers, saute for a couple of minutes. Then add the chicken, saute for 5 or 6 minutes, even longer if the chunks are bigger. You want to make sure it's no longer pink. And if you've got to add some more oil to that, put in a sprinkling of oil to keep that chicken moving around. Then add the garlic, saute for only a minute because you don't want that garlic to be brown, but you want it to open up. Push the mixture to the side of the pan. Then put in the remaining tablespoonful of olive oil. Add the curry powder, the coriander, and the rice very quickly. Saute that for 30 minutes moving around. You're basically toasting the rice and the curry powder, coriander together to give it a really nice flavor. Then quickly add the chicken broth, coconut milk, and salt, and then move it all around, simmer it for about 15 to 20 minutes. Don't put a top on it till the rice is tender. Stir in the ginger for the last minute or two and maybe the basil leaves on top to serve. And you've got a dynamite recipe. It is really good. You'll love it. It really is good.
Sounds delicious. And if you would like a copy of this recipe, well, you can just let Zorba know. He'll be happy to come to your door.
And that's right. That's
what give you the recipe, Zorba, but make it for you.
That's right. But since I'm probably not going to come to the door, what I think you probably should do is go to the web, go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. But Zorba, before I hand the reins back to Carl, it's time again to slog our way through the muddy waters of medical quackery. This is Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Today's Quacking Up topic came as a tip from a listener, Mark, in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So, Zorba, what can you tell us about the carbolic smoke ball and how did it change the relationship between consumers and companies in regard to false claims?
Well, first of all, let me tell you something. I don't think you should use the carbolic smoke ball, Tom, to keep away COVID. I mean, you know, this is really an interesting case. It's an odd tale against a backdrop of sort of Victorian London, and it's actually known to legal students from all over the world because it sort of defined the trading relationship between customers and providers of all this stuff. So the smoke ball was a peculiar device. It was a cure for various ailments, like anything that ailed you, including influenza. It was a rubber ball filled with powdered carbolic acid. You squeeze the ball, sending a puff of this sort of acrid smoke right up a tube, inserted into your nose. Can you imagine this acrid stuff into your nose? The idea is that your nose would run and the cold would be flushed out. And so they offered a 100-pound reward. Remember, this is back like in 1918, where 100 pounds was probably worth about $2,000. I bet it was that much, easily, or $3,000. Anyone using it correctly who then contracted influenza. And then they deposited a bunch of money in the bank, showed that the money was there, that they actually would pay off. But what happened was the manufacturers ignored two letters from a husband, from a wife. Basically, they used the carbolic ball. They still got sick. And what happened is, lo and behold, everything sort of went poof, up in smoke. And they discovered it changed things because basically, if you claim to pay money for something, you then had to pay money for something. And this company was not about to do it. And you know why they weren't going to pay money for the carbolic smoke ball results?
Because
it didn't work. It didn't work. So they really planned. They never planned basically on paying the money. And one of the judges put it this way. If you advertise, it says, I've got a quote here from this. If I advertise to the world that my dog is lost and that anyone who brings the dog to a particular place will be paid some money, are all the police or other people involved with lost dogs expected to sit down and write me a note saying they accepted my proposal? No. If you advertise it, you got to pay the money out. And that's what basically, that's where it changed the consumer thing. You actually just, if you say it, you got to pay it.
Yeah, I was kind of hooked on that. They don't have that anymore, right?
No. And I was kind of hooked on it, too. You know, spray the carbolic smoke ball into yours, and then we won't get COVID. You know something? Maybe we should bring back the carbolic smoke ball. Maybe it's a COVID cure and we don't even know it. What do you think?
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to the show? I'm passing that question by. Post it on our Facebook page or just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And look who's here. Carl's coming now. Okay, I'll go back to my kitchen, where I'm alphabetizing the TV dinners in my walk-in freezer.
Thanks, Tom. Maybe one day I can casually browse through Tom's walk-in freezer of TV dinners. I mean, he's alphabetized them, So I might as well right. take a look.
Yeah, that's right. And I've got this image. Should I have a C dinner tonight or a D? And we'll see a celery, you know.
S, you know, Salisbury steak, maybe?
Yeah, an S. That's right. S is Salisbury steak. That's right.
800-462-7413 is the number to call if you'd like to leave us a question. And Zorba, we get so many calls from our wonderful listeners and so many great questions, but we also get some calls from helpful listeners offering up their comments or their health tips. So let's take some time now to hear a few of these calls in a segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Thanks, we appreciate it.
Yes, we do. We appreciate it.
maybe.
I appreciate it. All right, first up, Zorba, do you remember Smell-O-Vision?
Yeah, I remember the concept of Smell-O-Vision. Yes.
I don't remember it. I've read about
it. I got to tell you, Mad Magazine, come on, Smell-O-Vision. I was probably 11 or 12, and the idea of Smell-O-Vision, and actually Smell-O-Vision, you were going to go into a movie theater.
Right.
And at the appropriate times in the movie theater, they would just give out an odor that would be part, make you feel like you were part of the movie, you know. But my memory is that, like, maybe I was 10 years old when I was thinking about Smell-O-Vision.
Yes. Okay, well, for this next Wisconsin caller, I'm glad there's no such thing as smell-o-phone.
Hi, Zorba. I wanted to bring up the power of raw garlic. I've been taking raw garlic for about the last 6-7 months now, and even if I just have a little bit of a sore throat, it takes right care of it. It feels like within a day, it's completely gone, and within hours, it's mostly gone. Thank you, and have a good day.
Well, I've had a lot of raw garlic questions, and I actually go back to an article that I read years ago, and it was because it was a doctor and a priest. Sounds like a story. Doctor and priest walk into a bar in Wisconsin, doesn't it? But it was a story. It was a doctor and a Catholic priest, and they loved going out to Italian food, but the priest had to go back to whatever his congregation was, and the doctor had to go back to the office. And it was an article in JAMA. It was sort of a letter to the editor of what shall we do? Because in the afternoon, we smell in our, you know, we like the smell of garlic, but people do not like the smell of garlic breath. And so the answer was, after you eat your meal and go back, floss, that's number, brush your teeth, obviously, floss. Brushing does not work. Huh. Flossing with that, and then gargle with Listerine. So if you really want to get rid of it, you've actually got to do three things, because you got to brush your teeth to get the big particles out. You got to floss because the garlic, if you crush garlic, you know, there's an oil and the floss really is on the teeth. And then you've got to use Listerine or Lavoris or some other mouthwash of your choice. And then you're going to be probably 98% garlic free, but not 100%, because I've discovered that people who eat a lot of garlic probably still have garlic in their breath.
Smell a radio now.
Smell a radio. That's exactly it. But yuck, smell a phone, but smell a radio. Anyway, there's my garlic advice for today.
When I was in college, I was living with some roommates, and I don't know why this came up, but they bet me, they put some money together. I can't remember how much money. To eat a bunch of raw garlic. I think it was like 3 or 4 large cloves of garlic, and I had 5 minutes to do it. And so I took the bet, of course, and what I did is I cut it up into little pieces, and I didn't even chew it. I just swallowed it with water like I was taking, you know, like as a pill. And it took like an hour or so, and all of a sudden my stomach got really upset. But the weird thing was, for days, like even if I'd showered, I was sweating garlic for days. Like it stayed in my system for quite a while. But I think I got like $10 out of that or something.
$10. And what a strange bet. That's right.
I mean, so bored. What were we doing?
I mean, that's right. COVID. It wasn't even COVID-related boredom.
800-462-7413 is the number to call with a question or a comment for the good doc. And Zorba, on a recent show, I came up with a broccoli joke. I don't know if you remember that, but
broccoli joke.
It was pretty bad. You know, pretty sure I got a courtesy laugh out of you on that.
Pretty bad, yeah, courtesy laugh. That's right.
To be honest, I don't think it deserved more than a courtesy laugh. Anyways, this caller is from.
I like that phrase, a courtesy laugh. When you're with a group of people and they say something and you don't think it's funny, you go and you know it's not funny at all, but you're doing a courtesy laugh.
That's yeah, good. Just make them feel good. This is a caller in Bloomingdale, Wisconsin, and they wanted to offer up their own broccoli joke. So here it is.
And actually, I have another broccoli joke. My broccoli joke is, what's the difference between broccoli and boogers? And the answer is, a three-year-old doesn't eat broccoli. That's it.
There you go.
That's really
now. That's more than a courtesy laugh, Zorba.
No, that's really funny.
That's a real laugh.
And you know what? That's a teenage joke. You know, adults don't usually say the word booger. It doesn't usually say it. That's funny. I like it. That's a good broccoli joke.
Good broccoli joke.
You know what? We need more broccoli jokes.
Sure.
If people out there want to send us your broccoli jokes or your cauliflower jokes or your carrot jokes or your apple jokes or any fruit jokes. And we're not doing animal jokes. This is a vegetarian joke time. Please send them to Zorba@WPR.org or better yet, call us, Carl. Give them the number.
Call us. 800-462-7413. We want to hear your broccoli jokes. And vegetable jokes and fruit jokes. No animal jokes. I like that rule.
No animal jokes. We're staying away from animal jokes. That's a political issue. Vegetables are not political.
Cruelty-free jokes. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's do the segment where you get yelled at for something you said on the show. Here's another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc.
All right. This comes from a listener who calls himself Manny Manhattan. I don't know if he's in Manhattan. It's not. He didn't say Manny in Manhattan. He's Manny Manhattan.
Manny Manhattan. I like it.
Like Dr. Detroit.
That's it. Yeah. I like
okay.
it.
Okay. Like Manny says, "Dear Dr. Z, I'm a newbie to your show. I like Tom because of a joke he told that is still making me laugh. Zorba said, 'Did you know that mushrooms are good for your memory?' And then Tom replied, 'I don't eat mushrooms, and I can't remember what you just said.'"
I remember that. That's right. That's
all right. Manny says, "The reason I'm writing is this. I'm disagreeing with the doctor. Oh, 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 oh." And he threw an extra O in there. I think there's only supposed to be three O's. Classic Manny Manhattan. Manny continues, "Chickpeas don't look like baby chickens. They look like marshmallow peeps." And I think, Zorba, you were talking about how they look like baby chickens.
Actually, maybe? You know what? They do look like peeps. They do look like peeps. Peeps. Yeah. Now that I think about it, yeah, they do like peeps. They don't taste like peeps. Why do we only see peeps around Easter? You can't get peeps.
I'm actually glad we only see peeps around Easter.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, but what if you're in college and you're getting stoned and you want to get peeps? You can't get them anywhere. You know what? Amazon.com. I bet you can buy peeps.
Power to the peeps. Sorry. On Amazon.
Sorry. Anyway, getting back to the garbanzos.
Manny continues here. "Not for nothing, garbanzos are also called chi-chi beans. Baby chicks always talk about my brother cheap. And that's the end of the email.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I thought the idea of peeps was good. I think the rest of the email failed. I'd give Manny a B- on the last part of the email, okay, but an A+ at the beginning.
Not peeps even a courtesy laugh here for Manny Manhattan.
No,
huh?
No, I got the courtesy laugh for the peeps. Got the courtesy laugh for the peeps. That's pretty good.
All right. Do you disagree with the good doc? Don't chicken out. Just let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at...
No, don't garabanzo out. Zorba@WPR.org.
All right. After the break, we'll have plenty more of your calls and emails to get to. Another interesting topic to discuss. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where anytime you can leave us a voicemail and Zorba might just get to it on a future show. But before we hear from more of your listeners.
I like the word might.
Might. We get a lot of calls. It's hard to promise things, but you might. Zorba, let's hear about eating a late dinner and how maybe it's not recommended.
Well, you've heard that before, haven't you? I'm eating too late at night.
I've heard like eating snacking late at night's bad, yeah. Well, but like I mean, a late dinner, though? What's the difference?
Well, the real question is, do we metabolize things differently when things are going on late at night? And there are a number of studies that show that people eat later tend to be overweight. And their questions, well, is it because they're really snacking, like you said, throughout the day? And if we look worldwide, there are about 2 billion people who are overweight. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, people are overweight due to the Green Revolution that occurred roughly 25, 30 years ago. So calories are cheap. I mean, you can go to Mickey D's, McDonald's, and for, you know, roughly $6, you can get 3/4 of the calories you need for the whole day. So calories are cheap. So we eat a lot of calories. Humans do that. You look back at pictures of the 50s and 60s, and everyone looks thin. And the answer is no, they actually are normal weight, you know. And so there, but anyway, there are many issues with this. But this was a study that looked at eating dinner late at night. What does it do? So it goes on the fact that eating late at night may actually be bad. So here's what they did. 20 healthy volunteers, 10 men, 10 women, okay? And they gave them dinner, okay? They had dinner either at 6 o'clock in the evening or 10 o'clock in the evening, okay? All the volunteers went to bed at 11 o'clock in the evening, all right? Mm-hmm. And the researchers looked periodically. They were in environment so they could be sampled. And they were looking at blood sugar. They were looking at fat metabolism. They were looking at other things. So here it is. You're going to sleep, but you're in a sleep lab. So periodically they're coming and drawing your blood. Then you're going back to sleep. Okay. Everyone 11 o'clock.
Sounds awful.
Well, it sounds awful, but you're getting paid probably.
Okay. Paid. Gotcha.
In college, you know, look at awful. I mean, you ate all that garlic and you got paid $10, you know, right. So.
I didn't have a garlic blood draw though at night.
No, you didn't if there were one. But yeah. The average peak blood glucose, in other words, blood sugar, was 18% higher in people who ate their meal at 10 o'clock p.m. When they looked at the 2 o'clock a.m., I think it was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I can't remember exactly, the blood sugar was still quite high for the people who ate late at night. And the amount of fat burned decreased in total fat burn, they could tell this from other metabolic studies, decreased in people who ate at 10 o'clock in the evening. So in other words, the people who ate at 6 a.m., water's going to be a little murky here, but the people who ate at 6 p.m. then had better blood glucose in the middle of the night, had more fat burn in the middle of the night. But there were individual differences among the volunteers. So for some of the volunteers, you know, who are all healthy people, the difference was dramatic. And for other volunteers, it didn't seem to make much of a difference. So there are individual differences here. Now, I bring this up for an important reason, because people will say, you know, that person can eat so much and they never gain weight, right? So they do that. They eat so much and they never gain weight. And another person will say, gee, as soon as I eat, I gain weight. Well, these turn out to be individual differences. And it may be that the person who gains weight is the person who's eating more food later in the evening. And they're one of the people who have a spike in their blood sugar and are not metabolizing their fat. And the people who, a person who is not susceptible, it doesn't make a difference when they eat their food. So my recommendation is, if you're overweight, have an earlier dinner and stop eating after 6 o'clock in the evening and see whether or not that makes a difference and whether or not that helps you lose weight.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. Zorba, when I read that article, the first question I had was, but wait a second, what about all those Europeans who are so healthy? Don't they always eat really late?
Well, you bring up a good point. I was thinking about that because we tend to eat late at night, and I like to do that. The Europeans are really of a good weight. They eat late at night. They also do other things, though, within their circadian rhythm. For instance, they often nap during the day for an hour or two. We don't do that. So that was not studies within the study. Mm-hmm. The other thing is there's a cultural issue. They do eat late at night, but look at the number of calories they eat. And look at how they eat. They eat a more Mediterranean diet. They have a more balanced diet that they have. And so, and they often consume, especially the adults, will consume a little wine or a little beer with their meal. So they're eating differently than we are, but they're also eating different food than we are. So good point. Well taken. May make a difference. Individual circumstances here, but it may not make a difference in Europe because they are not as fat as we are.
Let's get back to more of those calls now. Here is a caller just south of the border in Juarez, Mexico.
I have been listening to your program for over 20 years. I love it. I have a question regarding attention deficit disorder. Is it possible to handle it without medication, or do you suggest that I do take medication? Thank you so much, Dr. Sorb. Bye-bye.
Well, first of all, ADHD existed long before we had medications to treat ADHD. And one of the issues with ADHD is for kids in school, because they can't sit in the classroom and learn from the teacher, or they disrupt the classroom. But for kids who might work on a farm, let's say, who don't necessarily sit in a classroom, it's not the same issue. So one way to treat ADHD, especially in childhood, is to have your child go to an alternative school, or in this day and age, you might have a year or two where you actually, if you can do it, teach your kid at home, and they don't go to school. They do other social interaction. So there's been some homeschooling of children with ADHD, which has been as effective as medication because they're not sitting in the classroom. So that's one issue. The other issue with ADHD has a lot to do with sleep. Kids with ADHD, and even probably adults with ADHD, need more sleep and often don't get it because they are hyperactive. But making sure a child really is in bed, especially a growing child, for 9 hours or 10 hours is very important. And shutting off that screen, no TV, no telephone, no computer for a half an hour before going to sleep. Those things may definitely help ADHD. And then, of course, the final thing are support groups. There are a lot of parents out there with support groups for ADHD. There are a lot of Facebook page groups with ADHD going on there, and talking to other parents, especially if they have children with ADHD, is very important. Or if you're an adult with ADHD, joining one of the adult support groups and finding out tips that they use to help basically treat their disease without drugs or with fewer drugs.
800-462-7413 is the number to call with your questions. But before we get back to those calls, Zorba, let's dial up the old Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a listener question. This email came to us from Andrew in Lacey, Washington. Dear Zorba, I love the show and have been listening for many, many years. You are informative, fun, lighthearted, and entertaining. So there, you got a compliment. That's nice. He goes on, since you all seem to have fun with constructive criticism, I thought I would throw my 2 cents worth. You mentioned the Mediterranean diet on almost every show and that it's the king of diets since the people in that area live so long. From my research, the Okinawans have a slightly longer lifespan. So wouldn't that make their diet the king? The Okinawan diet is mostly carbs with a ratio of 10 to 1 carbs to protein. That doesn't mean go out and eat Pop-Tarts for the carbs. They mostly get it from the purple sweet potatoes they eat. So I was wondering why you don't mention the Okinawan diet as much, as it may be the real king of diets, if longevity is your goal.
Well, let me ask you something. Do you ever eat sweet potatoes?
I love sweet potatoes. Yeah, my wife makes a sweet potato stew. That's awesome.
So you love sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
So you go to the grocery store, right? How big is the potato section compared to the sweet potato section?
A lot bigger.
A lot bigger. It's like
I had to visualize it for a second there. Yeah.
8 to 1. That's it. So people in this society, we don't eat a lot of sweet potatoes. But looking at the Okinawans, first of all, they're a very specific genetic group. They walk all the time, just like the people in the blue zones in Europe. They're part of the blue zone people worldwide. Blue zones being a moniker that was named by an author who went and studied people who basically had longevity. And their diet also has, if I remember correctly, they fish protein, that's their main protein that they have with fish, but the walking and the moving around are the issue. So they're right, that might be another diet that we would follow. I've got to look more into that. I call the Mediterranean diet the king of diets for a variety of reasons. First of all, it is delicious. It is wonderful. I like sweet potatoes, but I'm not going to eat sweet potatoes every day. I'm going to eat a variety of fruits and vegetables every day. But this may be another king. You know, in Europe, they had more than one king. Several kings.
Yeah.
You know, so this might be a king. Or it might be the queen of diets. You know, and I just don't have to have a king. We can have a queen of diets. So we'll do more on the Okinawan diet on the show, and we'll do some information about the Blue Zones. And actually, there is a new book out. Well, I don't know how new it is, called The Blue Zone Cookbook. And I think, Carl, we ought to find out about that cookbook and try to get that author on the show. And if we can't, we're going to do a couple of recipes from that cookbook.
That sounds great. 800-462-7413 is the number to call with your questions. Back to those calls now. Here is a listener in Jacksonville, Florida.
Quick question. It's regarding a product called Saw, S-A-W, Palmetto. Palmetto. I saw one of those things, somebody selling something, of course, and it says, oh, it's great, oh, you know, you're going to have luscious and luxurious hair. And I have very fine, very thinning hair. So, yes, I would like to have all that wonderful hair grow back. But then I read something else where it said, no, women should not take that. That's just for men who has prostate problems. So my question is, will that stuff really help Saw Palmetto? I appreciate your help, and I hope you have a good day. Love you guys. Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Nice compliment. Saw Palmetto is basically sold for men who have prostate problems. And the data, unfortunately, on Saw Palmetto is really not good. There have been a number of double-blind studies on Saw Palmetto. Does it work? And the answer is it probably doesn't work. But I always tell men, for instance, if they're taking it for their prostate and they feel like it works, stick on it. Doesn't mean it's bad. It's not going to do you any harm. And there's a lot of mental stuff associated when you've got a prostate. You've got a prostate issue and you have trouble urinating. Now, looking at Saw Palmetto for hair, no harm, no foul. You can take it, see if it works. I haven't seen any data that says if it works. So the information you're getting is anecdotal information. But the answer is if you're going to take it, it's going to take about 3 to 6 months before you're going to see a difference, because the hair that we cut at the end, you know, of our, you know, that we cut when we go to the beauty shop is hair that has been there for a while. And if you look at people who lose hair, for instance, from chemotherapy, it takes about 6 months to grow out. So no harm, no evidence it works. If you want to try it, I recommend you go to consumerlab.com. I love them because they test test all the drugs to see whether or not the drugs really have enough saw palmetto in it and see if it works. And if you decide to take us, give us a call in 6 to 12 months and tell us whether it works. We'll talk about it on the air.
All right. Good advice, Sorba. And look at the time. We're out of it. We're out of time.
Oh, yes. Sorba. Oh, yes,
yeah.
We are.
Yeah,
we
gotta
yes,
go. We are. Well, we'll see you next week. See you next week, Zorba?
Yes, I will.
If you miss anything during the show,
I will be here.
If you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org. And of course, through Facebook. And there you can see great pictures of Tom and I. Even though Tom is not here, his photos live on. And of course, he lives on. He's probably in his kitchen right now just preparing that wonderful dish.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Please do visit the Facebook page for Zorba's coronavirus updates. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.